Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, February the 5th. And welcome to our commentary. Welcome to our chat with our friend George Rodriguez down in South Texas. Today, we're going to talk about certain balloons flying around North America. We're also going to talk about Speaker McCarthy. Give a little report card. I know it's early, but just a little report card on Speaker McCarthy. And we're also going to talk about what's happening on the border, getting an update from George on what's happening on the border, especially certain people who seem to be sneaking in, who have no business sneaking in. So let me say hello, as always, a warm welcome here from North Texas to our friend George in South Texas. How are you, George?
Real good. How are you?
Just great. Now, just a quick weather report. You know, we had 3 or 4 days up here of ice and really pretty much shut in. You couldn't go out because the streets were horrible. What was it like down in San Antonio?
Well, in fact, exactly a week ago, we had this cold front that came through, and it dropped the temperatures down to the low 30s.
Wow.
We hovered at freezing, and in fact, on Tuesday, we did have some sleet here in our section of the woods. Just north of us, it was pretty bad. It warmed back up within 24 hours, 48 hours, it went above freezing. And then yesterday it was in the 70s. So
yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it was absolutely gorgeous today. I think 50s or 60s here as well. But what was amazing, George, is that we had 4 days, pretty much Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, pretty much shut in. You couldn't really drive. The streets were really not, I guess you could drive if you wanted to, but no one did, just out of pure common sense. But then on Friday morning, something very funny happened. The temperatures did go up a little bit Thursday night, but then Friday morning, everything froze. So a lot of people went out Friday morning thinking this is over, and they got caught in all kinds of traffic problems. I mean, some of the streets were even shut down. So by middle Friday morning, by noon, everything was fine. And I could kind of tell with my own car, you know, I left one of my cars outside in the front. And when I woke up in the morning, the windshield was like pure ice.
Yeah.
And then by 10:30, 11 o'clock, it had all melted. So that was kind of, I think, the best example of the day. Well, just a quick couple of things I wanted to mention here, George, a couple of people that we remember growing up. Happy number 82 to Roger Staubach. 82. He's 82 years old, the great Roger, who I think a lot of people forget came out of the Naval Academy. I believe he was the Heisman Trophy out of the Naval Academy. And then he couldn't play in the NFL for a few years because of his military commitment, sort of like Dave Robinson down in San Antonio with the Spurs. But when he finally made it to the NFL with the Cowboys, of course, he was quite good. 4 Super Bowls, a couple victories in the Super Bowl. He was just a great quarterback.
Let me stop you on that, because a very interesting point or a very interesting story is
sure.
That my daughter, Steffi Staubach, was my intern in 1990 when I was working for Jack Kemp at HUD. Steffi was my intern for a summer. And then Fran Tarkenton's son was also an intern of mine. So I got to meet the great Roger Staubach twice, and it was quite a thrill.
I bet. We actually met him at church one day, because, you know, he's Catholic. So we were going to St. Rita Catholic Church. This is many years ago. And, we're sitting there waiting for the Mass to begin. I look back, and Roger Staubach and his wife are sitting behind me.
Ah.
And I say, I cannot pass this up. So I introduced myself. He was very nice gentleman. Extremely nice guy.
Very humble.
Yeah, he is just a great guy. Just a great guy. And it turned out to be, of course, a very good quarterback as well. The other, by the way, if you're working with Jack Kemp, you're probably going to meet a few quarterbacks.
Oh, I met a bunch of football players. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
A bunch.
Yeah, I bet you're going to meet a few of them who are contemporaries of Jack Kemp. The other fellow I want to remember today, Henry Aaron, who was born on this day in 1934, passed away a year or so ago. And, you know, what else can you say about Henry Aaron other than he is, in my opinion, still the number one home run champ. And, you know, I remember I grew up watching Henry Aaron, or at least not watching, but following him.
Uh-huh.
And I finally had a chance to watch him one time in 1971 when Milwaukee had gotten a team, you know, the Milwaukee Brewers.
Right.
And then the Atlanta Braves came in for a one-game exhibition. And there was Henry Aaron. I mean, it was just it was really a great feeling to watch him play, even though it was an exhibition game. You just want to have that experience of having watched Henry Aaron. But the thing about Aaron that always stuck with me was how consistent he was. You know, he never hit 50 home runs, but he hit 44, 45, 46, 47 many times. He was the MVP one time, but he was at the top three or four candidates for the MVP year in and year out. So this is a guy who was as consistent as a player has ever been. And I think that his personality, again, humility, just a great guy. And the other day I was watching a quick documentary about Dusty Baker, you know, the manager of the Houston Astros, and how when Dusty came up, Henry Aaron sort of became his mentor.
Mm.
And he's the one who kind of, you know, taught him the ropes of being a young major leaguer. So I've always loved Henry Aaron. And it's a shame, George, that the year that he died, that was the year that the Braves were going to have the All-Star game in Atlanta.
Oh, yes.
And that was the year that the commissioner decided to go woke and take the game. And what a horrible way to remember Henry Aaron. I mean,
and have you seen, you know, Silvio, have you seen the latest statistics on the breakdown of the elections in Georgia that they were screaming and yelling about? I mean, virtually in every single election, in every race, the black vote was extremely high. It was higher than ever before.
Right.
So this whole situation about pulling the game, the All-Star game, because it was what did they call it? Jim Crow 2.
Yeah, Jim Crow 2. Yeah, what a terrible thing, yeah, to say that.
Absolutely insane.
Yeah, it was. And what it bothers me more than anything else, George, is that the commissioner has not apologized. He should come out and say, look, I blew it. I blew it.
Yeah,
I made a mistake, and I blew it. But he did cost. And this is what people don't realize. These All-Star games are a lot of money for small businesses.
For small businesses, exactly.
Yeah, all these restaurants.
Small minority businesses.
And he took a lot of money from them. Took a lot of money from Atlanta-based businesses. And, you know, what can you say? Well, we hope that I'm still hoping for the commissioner to apologize. But, again, one more note about this. The Braves did win the World Series that year. So it's almost like God got even with the commissioner. You know what I mean? God said, okay, you're going to pull that stunt on the city of Atlanta. They're going
to
win the World Series.
It.
Yeah, they're going
to
win the World Series.
Force you to have the World Series there.
Yeah, they're going to win it. They're going to win it. And they upset the Astros that year, as you know.
I don't remember that part.
You don't remember that? Okay. Well, let me remind you. They beat the Astros in seven games, and I was one of those who thought the Astros were going to win. But you know how sometimes the baseball goes that way. All right, three big stories today, George, that I want to get into. Balloons, the border, and Speaker McCarthy. Let's go with the balloon. You know, I used to remember when talking about balloons was kind of fun.
Yeah.
You know, like, up, up, and away, my balloon. You know, remember that song by the Fifth Dimension?
My beautiful Chinese balloon.
Yeah. And I remember there was a song when we were in high school. There was a song called, It's Like a Yellow Balloon on a Rainy Afternoon or something like that. So it used to be fun talking about balloons. Who knew we'd be talking about balloons in the context of national security, but we are. Here's how I see it, and please tell me how you see it. How I see it is that I expect the Chinese to do stuff like this. I expect the Chinese to try to take advantage any way they can. They're an adversary, and so they're going to take advantage. My eyes are open when it comes to the Chinese. But I do not understand why we did not tell the Chinese. We saw that balloon coming out in the ocean. We knew it was coming. Apparently, it went through Alaska, down Canada, and into the U.S. Why didn't we call China when the balloon was out in the Pacific, I guess, in the upper Pacific, and say, please, change the destination or we're going to shoot it down right now. We're going to shoot it down over the ocean right now. Why didn't we do that? Why did we wait until it was over Montana? Why did we wait until the story broke? I mean, the White House didn't want to share this. So I don't know. I get the feeling the White House blew it. That's how I see it. I think they blew it. They demonstrated weakness. So how do you feel, George?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it demonstrated weakness because the Chinese, who are our greatest adversaries at this point, I mean, even more so than Putin and Iran, these characters are pushing the envelope. And, you know, they're tweaking our nose and they're seeing how far they can go. And this really showed the willpower of the Democrats in office right now. First of all, for them not to want to admit it or say anything about it until it was over Montana and people were actually looking at it with our naked eye. And then for the Chinese to say, well, it's mostly, and they use the word mostly, that it was mostly a weather balloon. Well, what was the rest of it? And then to allow it to drift over two-thirds of the United States until and not shoot it down until it was over over the East Coast in the water. I mean, it really, really shows either there is some kind of agreement behind the scenes with the Chinese and the Biden administration, or they're scared of them, or actually they absolutely think that the Chinese are harmless,
right.
That the Chinese are going to be like, you know, some type of individuals or a government that they can talk to and persuade and debate. The other issue that really bothers me on this is how quickly the media today has begun talking about, well, they ran and asked Trump and the Trump administration folks that were in the Trump administration, whether or not there had been balloons that they had seen and why they had not shot them down. Well, you know, first of all, whether there were balloons or not, I mean, why do we have to regurgitate old news? Or, you know, are they trying to play the game with, well, you didn't do it, so they didn't do it either. Either way you look at it, the fact of the matter is that we are now under, I mean, we are in a perilous situation. I'm sorry, but we are in a very perilous situation.
Right. And one of the concerns that I had, and I hope I'm wrong, I think I am, I hope I am, one of the concerns I had is that we didn't see it coming. In other words, that it came in without our knowledge.
At least they didn't mention it.
Yeah, or that it evaded the radar. That probably did not happen. We probably did see it. But I just think that, you know, when you have a balloon coming from China, you have to assume the worst.
Yes.
And when the balloon just happens to be flying by Montana, I'm sure they wanted to look at the buffalo population in Montana. I'm sure that's what they were interested in. You know, let's take a look at those buffaloes.
Checking on the Yellowstone Ranch.
Yeah, let's take a look at those buffaloes and see how they are, you know, raiding those buffaloes. But we also have a big nuclear base over there, and that's what worries me. But I just think the whole thing was it should have been right at the beginning.
Very poorly.
Absolutely.
And I just don't know how the Biden administration can defend it, explain it, and I certainly hope that come tomorrow morning, the media roasts them. I hope that the media gets some kind of backbone about this situation because it's dangerous. I mean, remember the U2 incident?
Yes.
I mean, you know, this is absolutely outrageous. In fact, there was another U2 that was shot down over Cuba as well.
Right. Yeah, that was during the missile crisis. And then, of course, the very famous one, was it Gary Hart?
Gary Powers.
Gary Powers, yeah, that was shot down over the Soviet Union back in, Eisenhower was president, so it must have been 59 or 60 when that happened. But, you know, I just think that the Congress has to require some information here. Now, I understand there's going to be a secret, you know, the committees that meet in secret to look at intelligence are going to, I was watching Marco Rubio today, Senator Marco Rubio was saying they're going to have a meeting and they're going to try to get some intelligence information. But I thought it was very weak of the Biden administration to start blaming or saying, well, it happened under Trump. In fact, from what I just saw a few minutes ago before we started recording, is that the Biden administration is now saying, no, it really didn't happen under Trump. I always felt that the accusation that it happened under Trump was a canard.
Yeah.
And the reason, George, is that if in fact it had happened under Trump, we would have heard about it already.
Oh, you know we would have heard about it.
Yeah, we would have heard about it not now, 6 months ago or 9 months ago or whenever, or even during the campaign.
Yeah.
So I never felt that it
really did.
And if it did happen, well, I don't think it did, but if it did happen, I mean, okay, we got to prepare ourselves, but I don't think so. I think Trump would have shut
over China. Imagine if we would send a balloon, a weather balloon, over China. I mean,
well,
imagine that. What does China care about the weather in Montana or in North Carolina for that much?
That's right. That's right. No, I mean, but here's the thing, too, that it was fascinating. I looked at the trajectory of the balloon, and it went through Canada, Alaska, through Canada. And I just saw
a
note.
The Canadians would have shot him down.
Yeah, but the Canadians apparently didn't see it either. Now, they didn't see it. Because there's a lot of as I read this afternoon, there's a lot of anger and a lot of questions in Canada that it was allowed to go. I mean, it flew literally from Alaska all the way down to Montana.
Well, I guarantee, if the Chinese cause us to catch a cold, Canadians are going to catch pneumonia.
Well, absolutely.
So they need to care about it.
Oh, they do. And in fact, there was an article the other day about how the Canadians they've let this down so much. They're nowhere near the military power. I mean, not that they were a powerhouse because it's a small country, but they actually had a very good Navy at one time and a very good Air Force. And they don't really have that anymore. So, yeah, a big mistake, I think, by the Biden administration. And I just think they looked really bad. And one thing that's starting to bother me a great deal about the Biden administration, George, is their inability to answer questions. You know, President Biden comes out, he doesn't answer questions.
Willingness.
Yeah, it just seems like they go out of their way not to answer questions. And I can only wait what the press secretary is going to say this week. She's probably going to say, well, I'm going to refer you to
the
Defense Department.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's like she's become nothing but I'm going to refer you here. Now, I do feel sorry for her in this sense. Is that it's not really her job to be explaining these things. And they basically just tell her, you know, they give her 3x5 cards and say, this is what you're going to say. If they ask you, this is what you're going to say. So I do feel a little bit sorry for her. It's not really her job to be answering these questions.
Sylvia, remember, I worked in that office.
Yeah.
I worked in that office. It is your job. It is your job to know as much as you can about everything that is going on pertaining to the administration. I mean, all things. And when you say, I want to refer you, you should explain why. Because this and this and this and this are their purview, and this is a sensitive issue, or this was contingent. And she doesn't do that.
Right.
On the contrary, she refers people to another department, and then she gets angry that you asked her.
Right.
And I mean, this is the thing that has really, really been very telling about how she handles things.
Right. Well, she's almost become a meaningless, that whole, you know, press conference. The press secretary has had these daily briefings.
Right.
I don't know how long that, I'm assuming they go back a long time. And this particular press secretary is about as useless as any I've ever seen.
That's true.
Either she doesn't know, or she doesn't want to know, or she doesn't care to know. But, she doesn't say anything, George.
Again, she admitted that she is there because she is the first black woman lesbian. Immigrant. Black lesbian immigrant.
So she checks a few boxes, right?
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, it apparently it's not her qualifications that got her there. Her genealogy.
Right. She, when they were looking at her resume, there were a few boxes that she would check. I get the feeling they keep her out of the loop.
Probably.
And they don't tell her anything, and they just say, you say this and you say that. Now, if she had any integrity, she would say, here's my resignation. If you want somebody to read your 3x5, you go out there and you read them.
Be a piñata.
Yeah, that's what I would, that's what she really needs to do. All right, well, let's go to another balloon, George. This one's pretty big, I think, over the border. On this one, we've been catching some pretty strange people trying to cross the border here recently. I mean, some people with some pretty amazing, a couple of people from Iran, I believe, that we caught, a couple of people from somewhere else. I mean, these are not your typical asylum seekers type people. These are people who are, frankly, very dangerous, George.
And who are hiding.
Who are hiding, yes.
Who are hiding.
So what can you tell us about this? I know you said that you wanted to talk about this, so tell us a little bit more about it.
This is a situation, again. I mean, we just had on Monday, last Monday, there was the initial meetings regarding an impeachment of Mayorkas. And the initial meeting in the House, in Congress, there were several congressmen that stipulated or that explained what was happening at the border. A congressman from Arizona, Chip Roy, my own congressman here from Texas, and they started explaining what was happening. They even had a couple of sheriffs there. What was really outrageous in this whole situation, Silvio, was that there were three congressmen, Democrat congressmen, including one from Texas, that came in late. The Democratic congresswoman from Houston, Sylvia Garcia, she shows up. And virtually all three of them said that there was no problem at the border, that it was overblown. Now, this happened on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday. On Thursday, the Border Patrol stops and then announces, well, actually, no, it wasn't the Border Patrol. It was the Texas Department of Public Safety. Texas Department of Public Safety stopped a car that had tried to make a run for it, and they stopped him. And inside of it is an Iranian who is on the terrorist list. Okay? They identified him because of his fingerprints. They identified him because of CIA records. And again, this shows the problem that we've got. I mean, this is not fentanyl that's coming in, because we've got enough of that. I mean, in Arizona, they busted one truck that had something like 30 pounds of fentanyl pills. But this is a character who was hiding, who is on the known terrorist list. Now, let me add to it that last year, last summer, the sheriff of Terrell County, with Junction, Texas, had stopped a car with four Chinese nationals in it. And both of them were in the military. And he turned it over to the FBI. We don't know what happened with that. Nothing was ever said about that. And it went under the radar. The only place that ran, the only story where it ran was in the Junction newspaper, as well as a couple of other little newspapers. But this situation, they couldn't hide it because the Texas Department of Public Safety just went straight for the announcement, and Breitbart and everybody started running with it. The border is, we are in danger.
Yeah.
I mean, we capture on a regular basis. They capture, not we, because I'm not out there, but they capture on a regular basis folks that have been previously arrested for serious crimes, everything
right.
from murder to
right.
rape, et cetera, et cetera. They catch them coming back in.
Right.
But the number of folks who get through that we don't know about, heaven only knows, including terrorists like this guy.
No, you're exactly right. I made myself a couple of notes as you were speaking there. First of all, I think Chip Roy is a great congressman, so you're very lucky to have him. He's just a great congressman. There's a hospital, just to talk about the border in general, there is a hospital, I think, in Yuma, Arizona, that has completely collapsed. They just cannot handle any more people.
Correct.
But the question that, you know, when I hear about these terrorists and people like this coming over, George, the big question is, where in the heck is Mexico in this? Because I'm sitting here, and I've spoken to many Mexican friends about this, you know, maybe you have too. And, you know, I speak to Mexican friends, and they're saying, wait a minute. You know, at one time, illegal immigration was, you know, somebody went up to work in your backyard or construction, and they sent money back to their mother. Okay, so that kind of illegal immigration, while it is illegal, at least benefited Mexico, because they were sending back billions of dollars. But this fellow who crossed, these Iranians, or these people on the terror list who crossed, they're not going to send any money back to Mexico, obviously.
No.
But they're using Mexican territory to get in. So you have to wonder, you know, what kind of a job is Mexico doing in this market, I mean, or in this area?
You know, the problem that we've got with the Mexican government, in my opinion, is that it's completely failed. The president of Mexico, Obrador, has made the comment that he favors hugs over guns, over bullets. So that's how he feels about what, that's his policy in dealing with the cartels. Now, the cartels are making money hand over fist with everybody that's coming to the United States. They even have now, and it's been confirmed by several independent journalists, they even have contacts in Pakistan, in Ethiopia, in Somalia, and they are helping, you know, somebody will pay the right amount of money, and they will help them get to the Texas border. So, we need to do something drastic to seal the border and control it. Unfortunately, we've got a lot of people, including the U.S. Chamber, who opposes closing the border for anything. And it's not that we need to close it. We just need to tighten it up.
Right.
I mean, we need to do something. I mean, the expanses, the number, the wide open spaces that we have in that border from San Diego all the way to Brownsville, I mean, it makes it very porous. And then once they get in, little is done to pick them out.
Oh, look what's happening in New York City,
mess
they have. But I wrote an article this week about the Canada border. The fact that there's been a breakdown in that too, and they're noticing a lot of people coming in. So obviously there's a sense out there that we don't have a border anymore, and that's what we don't have a border up there, we don't have a border down here. And I've argued that you don't have to close the border. You have to close it to certain types of activities. I mean,
exactly.
You still need, I mean, the amount of business that is done on that border is healthy. Trucks who come over and go south, all those maquiladoras on the border. So nobody's talking about shutting it down. I mean, we want the business to continue. The business is good for both sides. But I think we have to put a little more pressure on Mexico to check what they're doing down there, because if the Mexicans want to, they can be very effective. Okay.
They would do something about it.
If they want to. I remember a few years ago, either during the Reagan, I mean, either during the Trump administration or
during George W.'s, and then again during the Trump.
They had people, because I've had people from Central America say to me that you had these federales, which is their equivalent of their federal police, they were checking around bus stations.
Right.
And they were picking up people based on their accent. You know, they can tell
right.
if you're not from Mexico.
Right.
And they would literally say, who are you? Well, I'm Tomas or Juan or Maria. And they can, the minute you start talking, they know you're not Mexicans because of, and they would pick these people up and literally send them back. So they were doing that when, as you say, the George W. Bush administration, during the Trump administration. So they were getting the message. They're not getting the message now for whatever reason.
But we had cooperation from the Mexican government at that point, you know, and well, under the Trump administration, we had cooperation because Trump literally shut down the border for a couple of days and then threatened to shut it, to keep it shut. And quickly there was a response on that one. Quickly there was a response on that one.
Right.
So,
well, and also if you remember during the George W. administration, George W. Bush, that he set up that Merida initiative to send weapons to Mexico to fight the cartels.
But, there you go.
But Mexico did need to do certain things to get.
Unlike now that we're sending money to the cartels.
Right. But right now, right now it's a disaster. I don't know how else to explain
it. It really is.
It's a total disaster. Well, George, we got a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to get your feedback on Speaker McCarthy. So far, I give him a pretty good grade.
I did too.
I mean, he's been there roughly 30 days. In fact, almost 30 days. And I would say so far he gets an A+. I mean, it's early, but I give him an A+. I think he's doing a good job. He communicates well. He's making the right committee assignments. And he's off to a good start. I guess we'll know with a debt limit, with a debt increase.
That's going to be a tough one for him.
That's going to be a tough one. And I think they're ready for it, George. I really do. I mean, I get the feeling that the Republicans are ready for it. And what they have to do is they simply have to say, look, we need to do certain things about the spending. We can't stop everything, obviously. But we got to have certain reforms in some of this spending or we don't do the debt increase. Now, the Democrats are going to talk about default and all this garbage, which is not going to happen.
Well, I mean, they're already starting to talk about the impact on the poor.
Right. But I think you have to do it in a smart way. But I think most of the country realizes, I wrote a post about this week at American Thinker. I think most of the country realizes that you have to stop the borrowing.
The debt borrowing.
You know, you just can't
do
it.
Borrowing.
You just can't keep doing this.
Yeah, you can't. You know, two things.
All right, George, we probably won't talk next Sunday because of the Super Bowl, or maybe we'll probably do it after the Super Bowl. So give me your prediction, Philadelphia or Kansas City. Who are you calling on the Super Bowl?
I am hoping for Kansas City because Andy Reid, the coach, is a BYU alum who was there when I was
in school. I didn't know that.
And so, you know, I will pull. But unfortunately, the Eagles look very good. So.
They do. I'm hoping for Kansas City, too, because, as you know, Mahomes is a Texas Tech.
Correct.
Graduate, so I'm hoping for that as well. But you're right, the Eagles look really good, but it's hard for Cowboys fans to cheer for the Eagles.
Oh, it is.
You understand what I mean?
Yes, it's very, that's another one.
Yeah, it's like, you know, oh, you want the Eagles to win
for me.
After we're calling them names all year long, and now we want them to win?
I don't know.
They do have a great team. You got to give them credit.
And besides, the Kansas City Chiefs used to be the Dallas Texans. Remember that?
That's correct. In the early days of the AFL, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. I've forgotten about that, but they were owned by one of the Hunt brothers, right? Wasn't that who owned them?
Lamar Hunt.
And they became the Kansas City Chiefs after being the Dallas Texans. Where did they used to play? At the Cotton Bowl, I guess?
Yeah, they played at the Cotton Bowl. Yeah.
Wow. I wonder how many people around here even remember that. Because that's a long time ago. That was
I remember
60 years.
I remember, and I can't remember how old I must have been, but I remember the 1960 AFL championship between the Dallas Texans and the Houston Oilers.
Wow. Now that would have been exciting. Uh-huh. That would have been exciting. And by the way, the Houston Oilers was the perfect name for a team from Houston.
Yep.
Incorrect
today. Politically incorrect today.
Yeah. They became the Tennessee Titans, yep. Which I never really understood that move. And then they became the Houston Texans now, which is okay. I like that too. But Houston Oilers, I always thought that was one of the great names for a Texas team. I mean, if you're going to be Oilers, where else but Houston, right?
Oh, gosh,
the Oilers. Well, George, have a great week. And thank you, as always, for joining us. It's always a great honor to have you. Good luck with your book. Good luck with your activities. Where are you going to be speaking next?
Not till a week from today. I will be in Corpus Christi. And in fact, this coming Friday, I'm going to be in Del Rio and hopefully, under heavy guard.
Del Rio, Texas, right there on the border.
I'm learning Farsi before I get down there.
Yeah, you better. You better need to learn that. There's a few of those people you may run into. All right, George, thank you so much, as always, for joining us. Have a wonderful day. Good friend, George Rodriguez. From South Texas. A lot of stuff going on the border, which is why I wanted to talk to George about, obviously, the balloon, Speaker McCarthy. I'm happy with Speaker McCarthy so far. He's doing a great job. And this story with the balloons is just insane. There's just no other way to explain it. And what's happening on the border, that post that I had last week about what's happening on the border with Canada, where people are, filtering in huge numbers. So, we obviously don't have a border, and that's not a good thing. That's not a good thing. We have to have borders. And if you don't have borders, you're inviting all kinds of trouble into your country. Have a wonderful day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.